fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. 5-Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. 5-Alarm Task Force is brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you once again. Happy to have you with us. If you're a returning listener, we always love to have you back and listening for more. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're happy to have you with us. We hope you'll enjoy this podcast. This is going to be a very special podcast for us. Our guest today is attorney Robert Bellott. You may know the name, you may not. If you saw the movie Dark Waters recently with actor Mark Ruffalo in the starring role, he portrayed Mr. Bellott, an attorney who has taken on environmental problems and has been a leader and at the forefront of defending people against the mistakes of big chemical corporations. Right now, he is in the process of filing a class action request on behalf of every firefighter in this country since 1977, and or I should say, every citizen in the United States since 1977, because we are all being poisoned by these fluorine chain chemicals in everything that we use, used in our carpets, used in Teflon on our cooking pots and pans, used in the bunker gear that we firefighters wear on a regular basis to protect us, and yet inside of it are these carcinogenic compounds. So he is leading, he's at the forefront. We have a great discussion coming up. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. If you enjoy this podcast and you want to listen to some more, all you have to do is go to our new website at the number 5, that's 5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. And across the top menu, you'll see the word podcast. Click on that, and that will bring you to the library of over 140 episodes that we've recorded since 2016. And while you're on the website, we hope that you will sign up for our newsletter. It's right on the homepage or on the About page. And all you have to do is just put your email in there. We do not sell it. We do not give them away. We protect it to the best possible job we can do under the law. And we don't send spam. We'll only send the newsletter out about 6-7 times a year. And it brings you up to date with what's happening with the new corporation, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. And I have some great news that I'll bring up a little bit later in the show about our first official act. That's it. And if you ever wish to unsubscribe, all you have to do is just send us an email with the word unsubscribe in the subject line, and we'll take you off the list right away. We love you on Facebook. We're so glad to see all of you. Now, we just want to remind you that coming up next week, the Monday, the week of the 19th, we're going to be closing down the Dalmatian page on Facebook. Dalmatian is no more. It was a great company we had for a number of years with my great partners, Rich and Tom and Jesse. In the background, we're still working on one little project, but it's kind of like, you know, well, most of you know about it. It's our TV show, Cause and Origin, that we're working to try to get somebody to pick up for a pilot. But other than that, Dalmatian is no more. But you'll always be able to find us on Facebook at our 5 Alarm Task Force page. So look for us there. And please make sure you say friend. I try to get back there as often as I can and try to answer all your friend requests and the questions that you pose to me. Now, also, many of you listen to us on podcast platforms like iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and dozens of others. I found a podcast on sites that I didn't even know existed, but we're there and people listen, and that's what's important. Most of these platforms allow you to leave a review, and it's very important, and here's why. The way you leave the review is how the platform uses an algorithm when people search for our podcast. So if we have good reviews and 4 stars, 5 stars, we're higher up on the list when somebody does a search for 5 Alarm Task Force or firefighting podcasts or podcasts about fires, firefighting, etc. If we don't have a lot of reviews, then we're way down on that search list. So please take a couple of moments. If you enjoy the show, please leave some comments there. And by the way, don't be afraid to leave constructive criticism. We need that. That's how we get better, is learning from you, our listeners and our viewers. So we hope you'll do that. And that's it. So we're going to be right back with our guest, Robert Ballot, right after these words. Please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the gang from Insight Fire Training? Well, here's part of their upcoming schedule. Tactical Thermal Imaging Train the Trainer in Harrisburg Fire Department, Virginia. Insight Training will offer 4 days of customized training to the department. Days 1 to 3 will be in operations in service for their firefighters. On day 4, Insight Training will offer a customized live fire presentation for their training cadre. This event will be held October 27th to the 30th. Next, classroom hybrid 8-hour tactical thermal imaging training at Roxbury Volunteer Fire Department in New Jersey. Insight Training will offer an 8-hour day of classroom and live fire demonstrations. That will be on November 7th. Next, Faith, Family, and Fire Conference, November 14th to 15th. Instructors Howard Reinwald of FD Tactics, Chief Kurt Isaacson of County Fire Tactics, and Chief Andy Starnes of Insight Training will offer 2 full days of conference-setting presentations on Faith, Family, and the Fire Service. This event is sponsored by FD Tactics and will be in Maine. See their website for details, as the venue is still to be determined. Next, Live Fire Tactical Thermal Imaging Training in Harrisburg Fire Department, North Carolina. Insight Fire Training will offer 3 days of classroom and live fire training for the entire department. This event will be held on November 18th through the 20th. And finally, Tactical Firefighting Thermal Imaging Certification Level 1, sponsored by Infrared Training Center, will be held in Nashville, Tennessee area, December 1 through 4. This is the course you have been waiting for. It is 32 hours of in-depth training that provides the only fire thermography certification in the world credentialed by Infrared Training Center. Check out Infrared Training Center's website for registration details. Remember, Insight Fire Training, your best bet for firefighter TIC training.
We'd like to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. If this sounds like something you're interested in, you'll find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. And with me now at this point is a very special guest that we have. If you listen to the opening of the show, our guest today is Robert Ballot, an attorney. The name in and of itself might not be familiar to many of you. However, if you've recently seen or heard of the movie Dark Waters, about the water disaster up in West Virginia and Flint, Michigan, all those areas, that movie was based on Mr. Ballot's working that case as the plaintiff, representing the plaintiff in a class action, portrayed by Mark Ruffalo, a great actor. And subsequent to this, as you heard in the opening, Mr. Ballot has now joined this fight against PFAS and PFOS, not only for citizens in the United States because of all the pollution that's taken place by these companies, but especially those of us who are or were firefighters, going back to 1977, which happens to be the year that I started as a volunteer, to represent that we, many of us, may have PFAS and PFOS poisoning in us and not even know about it. And so a couple of things I just want to touch base on. I see that you went to college down here in Southwest Florida at New College. And I'm down here on the East Coast in Northwest Broward County. And then you established yourself in a practice in Cincinnati, where I actually went to rabbinical school in UC as well for a graduate degree. I didn't finish it because I got hired at a job away from Cincinnati. So, and I have a cousin who's an architect now living and working in Cincinnati as well. So what, initially, when I read your bio, you were a plaintiff against, representing chemical companies. But yet, when the West Virginia incident came up with Mr. Tennant, you decided to become the plaintiff and to defend the people against, in this case, one of the major companies. I'm not going to mention any names right now. But what made you make that change from being the defendant to the plaintiff?
Well, first of all, thanks so much for providing me the opportunity to speak with you today and talk to folks about what I still believe to be a major public health threat going on not only throughout this country, but all over the world with this class of chemicals known as PFAS, which we'll talk about here today. But you know, as you mentioned, I first got involved in this, 22 years ago. You know, I started my practice of law in 1990 in Cincinnati, as you mentioned, at the Taft Law Firm. And for the first 8 years or so was helping our corporate clients, a lot of big chemical companies and other companies, you know, to try to comply with all the different federal and state laws. And one day in 1998, I got a call in my office from a gentleman who identified himself as Wilbur Tennant and started telling me about cows dying on his property. And I was about to hang up the phone, frankly, until he mentioned that he'd gotten my name from my grandmother.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I paid a little closer attention at that point. And what he explained was he was raising cattle on property right outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia. And I knew that town well. My mom's entire family had grown up there. We spent a lot of time there as a kid. And so, you know, he was really asking if I would help him out. There was a problem he thought was pretty clear that was going on in his property. Nobody locally would talk to him. And, you know, my grandmother told him he could, that I'd at least talk to him. So I agreed that day in October 98, and he came up, and that changed my entire outlook on the law, on science, on the regulatory process, the legislative process, pretty much everything.
That's amazing. And to think that this one gentleman, thanks to your grandmother, was able to help you make that change, and now you really recently were awarded the special award. I guess they call it it's like the Nobel Prize of law practice for your work.
Right, the Right Livelihood Award, which mm-hmm. they call sort of the alternative Nobel Prize, since there isn't one for environmental
right.
issues. So yeah, that was fantastic.
It must have been, and I think it's from what everything I've read and heard about over the last few months. Just a few weeks ago, I had Dr. Graham Peasley on again, and we went over the results of his most recent tests, and I'm sure you're aware of the op-ed that was published in one of the Fire Trade magazines by someone, another writer.
Right.
And that yes. Dr. Peasley wrote a magnificent, I don't want to even say rebuttal, because he's so polite in his return letter. And I've noticed in interviewing him twice and then talking with him off the air several times, this is just who he is as a gentleman. And he was very nice, but still pointing out the flaws in that writer's, some of his facts that he used in his piece. And I think that with that research that he's done and continues to do, that the two of you almost fall like hand in hand, reaching out to protect not just the American people in general, but as in the intro, you're also, this is going to play a big role for those of us who are in the fire service. And when I saw the cover page of the class action that you filed, and I saw the date 1977, I said, you know, that's got to be fortuitous, because that's the year I did start as a volunteer. I got 8 years in before I was injured and had to leave active service, but it's always been a part of my life ever since. And that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast in the first place. And we've now brought that into a full swing with a nonprofit to help other firefighters in dire need. So with this new class action that you're seeking, and this really appears that it's really for every American citizen since 1977 who may qualify by having these, what anybody else would think would be an absolute minute amount of these chemicals in their body. I think it's with 0.05 parts per trillion or more of PFOA, and at least 0.05 parts per trillion for any other PFAS in their bloodstream. That's an amazingly minuscule amount, but I believe from the two of you, this must be a very powerful amount that you feel is worthwhile proceeding with this class action.
Yes, and the reason, for example, what I said, it was fantastic that the Right Livelihood Award was awarded in connection with this work, is my concern is making sure that facts and data and information are made available to people so that they understand the scope, extent, and severity of this public health problem.
Mm-hmm.
And having that award, for example, really helped increase awareness and internationally of these issues, which had frankly been covered up, for 50,
sure.
60, 70 years. And what we're trying to do now, you mentioned this latest lawsuit, we spent many years trying to uncover and reveal to the rest of the world, to the public, to the regulators, to the scientific community, what frankly had been known for quite some time about the health threat posed by one of these PFAS chemicals known as PFOA.
Mm-hmm.
That was the chemical DuPont used for Teflon. And those of you out there that are listening that have seen the movie Dark Waters or the documentary The Devil We Know, you see that story and you see that it took 20 years to really get that information out to the public about this one chemical.
Right.
And now we're beginning to realize that, that chemical obviously is not just in drinking water out in West Virginia. It's in water all over the country, all over the world. And it's not just that one chemical. There's these related chemicals, things like PFOS, that were used heavily in things like aqueous film forming foam,
right.
firefighting foam,
oh,
for
yes.
petroleum fires. And then related chemicals that have been coming out onto the market in recent years that are supposed to be replacing PFOA and PFOS, things with a couple fewer carbons that are now being used in foams or being found in water. And most of the work that's been done and most of the discussion you see out there focuses on water contamination, which is a huge issue, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But there's a concern, you know, particularly that's been raised by folks within the firefighting community that, look, you know, not only are firefighters and emergency responders potentially exposed through their drinking water at their homes, you know, and in their places of business, but they've been using these foams and almost bathing in them for years. And the gear, the turnout gear that they've been wearing historically, you know, was coated with materials that contain some of these PFOA or PFOA related materials. And we really need to know what exactly was the exposure, what is it doing to those who were exposed. And what we've been hearing from the companies, unfortunately, that were manufacturing these raw chemicals, the PFOA, the PFOS, these replacements, is, well, we did all that science and studies, everything you see in the movies, that was all about one of them, PFOA. And we just don't know enough about these others. And basically saying those of us who are exposed, which is at this point now the entire world, it's our burden to prove what these chemicals are doing to us. And so I'm trying through this new lawsuit to try to get the studies and the testing done by independent scientists who will tell us exactly what the effects of having these various chemicals in our body are doing to us, and to have that paid for by the companies who are responsible, so that fire departments, water providers, states, communities aren't stuck footing the bill and trying to figure out and have to prove this. These companies should have to pay for that proper studies, the proper testing to be done. So that's what we're trying to do. You know, we're really trying to make sure, and I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing here, which is having this discussion and talking about the fact that these chemicals were used in these various different products. Firefighters may have been exposed to these. And raising people's awareness that this exposure even existed. You know, for many, many years, I don't think anybody really even in the firefighting community was being told that these chemicals were there, that they were being exposed to them, or there could be exposure from disaster turnout gear or anything like that. And so we really need to increase awareness of that and increase the amount of studies and testing that's done so that we know exactly what the effects may be from that exposure. Sure. And it's rather mind-blowing to know this has been going on for decades and decades, 50, 60 years, and we're only now talking about this and becoming aware of it.
And that's really where the shame is. And, you know, how many people have we lost? Regular citizens, first responders, because of that. Now, when I started in 77 in a relatively small volunteer fire department just outside the city of Greensboro in Guilford County, our chief was considered one of the leading experts in fighting petroleum fires. We had a very large finished product tank farm right across the street from the airport in our fire district. At that time, it was our fire district. It was still county land. And we had, because of his renown, We had dozens upon dozens of five-gallon pails of AFFF in our storage room, and then eventually wound up building a shack in the back parking lot for more of it. And we trained often up at the airport because we were second due at the airport on an airplane incident and first due for a building fire there. And we practiced at the pit with AFFF. And as a matter of fact, just as in the last months that I was there, we purchased a dual agent truck, which used AFFF and Purple K. And it almost looked like a mini ARF that you see at the airports today, the big ARFs, air fire rescue. And this was a mini one with two turrets on it, one for each chemical. So at that time, and you know, with all the teaching that the chief gave us, and again, it wasn't just our department. He was a regional teacher all around and even spoke at national conferences. It never came up. We never knew that there was anything bad with it. We just knew because of all these tankers going back and forth from the tank farm to the gas stations on our the portion of the interstate we covered, we just knew that this stuff was the greatest thing since sliced bread to put out petroleum fires. So we were around it all the time with no idea that there was anything wrong with it.
Exactly. And unfortunately, that's a common story, that we're hearing now all over the country, all over the world. You know, these are issues I know that have become a major problem, for example, in Australia, New Zealand, mm-hmm. with the firefighting community, that this information simply was not, provided and was withheld, that there were these chemicals even there, let alone what the risks and the health threats could be from exposure to them. And that's really just very disturbing, frankly, given what was known going back so long about the potential issues with these chemicals, and to be putting them in products that you're then being told to spray out into the environment, or people are almost bathing in the stuff and not being told about these risks. And that's a real concern. And here we are in the year 2020, just now really starting to talk about this, community really first starting to become aware of this, when, this has been going on for 50 years.
Amazing. Do you think that, I'm going to be very crass about this, but do you think that the chemical companies just look at it as the cost of doing business?
I actually wrote a book called Exposure, mm-hmm. Which focuses on this history of how did this happen? How is it that in the year 2020, we're just now talking about this? How is it that the regulatory agencies, people like EPA or the FDA or Consumer Product Safety Commission, why is it these agencies haven't done something about this prior to now? How did that happen, particularly here in the United States? This is not some ancient story that happened in the 1800s. I mean, this mm-hmm. is going on during our lifetimes,
right?
In modern times, with information that was there that was simply being withheld. And it's incredibly complex, the story of how this happened and why it happened, which I try to detail in the book, just the different, the way the legal system, what was required, what was not required, what chemicals were covered, what weren't covered, that interplaying with the regulatory process and the scientific way science is generated, all of that sort of combining to create this perfect storm of environmental disaster as the result.
Right. And affecting, I was going to say millions, but it's actually billions of people, 7 billion people in the world today. And most anyone who's been around since 77 is facing these materials.
Exactly. And one of the concerns, particularly today in the year 2020, obviously one of the main concerns on everybody's mind is the pandemic and the virus. And
sure.
One of the effects of these chemicals that scientists are becoming the most concerned about recently is the ability of these chemicals to impact our immune system, or potentially decrease effectiveness of vaccines. In fact, CDC even posted something here a couple of weeks ago saying they're going to start to look into that. Because, here you've got this stuff. It's in our blood.
Right.
It's in our water. Our babies are being born with it. And it could have these potential effects. Why aren't we talking about this more? Why isn't this being the subject of a lot more intensive research in discussion? It's just mind blowing to see how this story was essentially kept under wraps for so long.
And yet, I guess today, a lot of us, especially my age, close to 70, feel that this is what we've seen all along our lifetimes, is how big companies work. They do what they want to make their money. They release the information that will be good for them, and they hide and bury the information that might be detrimental to them, and let the devil be damned.
Well, you know, and that's, you see that in this particular case, you see that this is not something that frankly, you know, should be a political issue. It's not something that's, you know, unique to one particular administration or another.
Right.
This has been going on for decades. It's gone on through multiple administrations, through both parties, and it just continues. It's systemic problems with the way in which these systems operate and the way in which chemicals are regulated and the way in which our legal system works and the burdens, you know, putting the burden on the exposed people, you know, to prove whether these chemicals are causing harm. It just perpetuates this problem. And it's you know, something I'm hoping, you know, with making this, putting this story out there through the film, the documentary, the book, all these discussions, you know, your podcast and the folks in the firefighting community talking about it, that people will finally come up with a way to potentially fix the system going forward. So this just doesn't happen. You know, we shouldn't have to be being used as the human guinea pigs with these chemicals, being told, well, let's just wait and see if you develop cancer. Let's see how many people develop cancer. Let's see if that's confirmed over the next 10 years. And then once we do, like, for example, with PFOA, we did human studies. We did massive studies that confirmed links with cancer, with kidney cancer, testicular cancer. And even then, once that was finally out there and finally confirmed, the company simply tweaked the chemical a bit, called it something new, and said, well, we're going to start all over again. And none of that science then applies to these, quote, new chemicals. And, it's sort of a whack-a-mole game where we take all this time to prove that this chemical can cause harm, and then you simply tweak it a bit, change it, and start all over again, and use the population as the guinea pigs to see what happens.
Right. It reminds me of the old adage, if you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. And,
right.
Whether you give it the chemical a new name or not, the basic, and we have great people like Dr. Peasley doing this research, that if you look at the makeup of the chemical with his studies, what he can do, to see that they all basically work from that same chain that pulls them together. Again, a name does not change the effect of the chemical and what its basic chemical makeup is. I think one of the biggest problems we've had here in the fire service is that the manufacturers didn't want to admit that they had used the material in our bunker gear. I mean, this is the very gear we wear to protect us when we go out to protect you. When those major chemical companies have an emergency, they dial 911 like everybody else. And they might have their own local teams that work, most of the big ones do, but they still rely on the community. You know, we both know with time in Cincinnati that there was a huge commercial plant in the greater Cincinnati area. Huge plant. And yet, they still depend on Greater Cincinnati Fire and Hamilton County Fire Departments if they have an emergency to come in there and help them. And yet on the other side, I'm not saying that company, but a company like the ones that were mentioned in the review and in the book and the lawsuit and stuff, those companies do the same. They still dial 911 in this emergency and they expect us to show up. They just want to say, thanks for being here. Thanks for wearing the gear that we make. But, we're not going to tell you what's inside of it. But you just do what you got to do. Take care of us here, and we'll be happy.
Right.
It's a one-way relationship that does not work.
Yeah, and there, you know, really at this point, I know there's one of the big questions, you know, particularly as this information is finally starting to come out and people are finally becoming aware of these exposures and, starting to realize the costs that are involved. For example, with drinking water, you know, with having to filter the water out and spend millions of dollars for filtration plants. And, you know, a lot of what's going on now is trying to figure out exactly who did know all of this. You know, we know that the manufacturers of the raw chemical, the PFAS chemicals, the PFOA and PFOS, they were aware.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have the folks that, for example, were, putting coatings onto clothing that are saying we didn't know. They didn't tell us.
Right.
You know, and it's very difficult, frankly, to find information about what chemicals are in a lot of these coatings and all. A lot of that's kept confidential by the manufacturers of the raw chemicals and of the coatings. So it's there was a lot of information withheld from a lot of folks, and that's it's the only way you end up in a situation like this.
Right. Right. All right. Well, you know what? Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this new lawsuit and who it's going to affect and what the average citizen and what my brothers and sisters in the fire service, whether they're current or former like me, what we need to think about as well. So we'll be right back with our guest, Robert Bellott, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey, guys. You call out, I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites. Time to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the TV's off, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But wait, it's not all right. When it's time for bed, keep your family safe in the event of a fire. Close before you doze. In other words, close your bedroom doors when it's time to sleep. You've installed working smoke and carbon monoxide alarms and practiced fire escape plans. Now add this important step to protecting yourself and your loved ones. Close before you doze. Closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, providing trapped occupants more time to escape when seconds count. Closed doors can slow the spread of smoke and fire, conserve oxygen levels, and keep temperatures significantly lower. Also remember, if you're the last one to exit, make sure you close the main door. For more information about close before you doze, visit ulfirefightersafety.org. A life safety message from UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, your local fire department, and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And welcome back to this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force. My guest today is Robert Bellott, a well-known attorney in the environmental side of life in this country and now around the world. He has been a proponent of keeping people safe, going from when he started out as working as to defend chemical companies. And after a certain incident that we talked about in the first segment, he moved and changed. He represents the people against the companies. And the movie Dark Waters we talked about, where Mark Ruffalo portrayed him in the story about the water disaster in West Virginia. And now we're talking about that water disaster is actually and was not localized. We are all facing it today around this country with chemicals that have been dumped, poured away, whatever, into our streams, our rivers, all waterways, of course, getting into the ocean probably as well. And now, most recently, Mr. Blatt is looking for class action status against these companies because of the poisoning. And as I mentioned in the first part, looking at a blood test, they're looking at parts per trillion. It's very difficult for the average person like me or you, or most of us, to understand what that is in a medical analysis of a poison in our blood. But they know how to do it. And Mr. Blatt, in his desire to file this class action suit, has set limits that need to be looked for, not just in firefighters and those of us who were or are, but for every citizen in the United States going back to 1977. So I'll ask you this now, Mr. Blatt. Where are you with this, and how does this affect what does the average citizen need to know, and especially what do us firefighters need to know, please?
Sure. You know, I think it's important to sort of talk, make sure we all understand what kind of chemicals we're talking about, because I think that helps understand where we're going with this case and why it's set up the way it is. You know, these are completely man-made chemicals. This class of what we call PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkylated substances. Quite a mouthful. You know, they're called forever chemicals because there are several thousand of these chemicals in this class, all completely man-made. None of them existed on the planet prior to World War II and prior to their invention right after the war. Mm-hmm. They all share some common characteristics. They have this really unique structure of carbons attached to fluorine, which makes them really strong. It makes them, you know, useful in all kinds of different industrial processes. Mm-hmm. And that's why they've been used not just in things like Teflon or firefighting foam, but these chemicals have been used in a vast array of different products over the last 70 years. You know, waterproof, stain-resistant clothing and carpeting, fast food wrappers and packaging, nonstick cookware, firefighting foam, electroplating chemical. I mean, just it's mind-blowing to try to figure out where all these chemicals have been used over the last 70 years. But this unique carbon-fluorine bond, which really doesn't occur much in nature, it makes them not only useful because they don't break down in the manufacturing process, but once they get out into the environment, they stay there virtually forever. You know, PFOA and PFOS, you hear them referred to now as forever chemicals because of that. You know, you have these scientists from the companies that say once they get out into the environment, they'll stay there virtually for millions of years. They don't break down under natural conditions. Mm. So all this stuff that's been made and emitted out into our environment that's gotten into our air, water, or soils, it's staying there until it's been removed. But the other really concerning, troubling thing about these chemicals, these man-made toxins, they have this ability to get into us. PFOA and PFOS, for example, have this ability to get in and stick into our blood. You know, we're exposed to lots of chemicals every day.
Sure.
And our bodies have a pretty good way of filtering them out and getting rid of them. This stuff, though, gets in us and sticks kind of to the blood, where it circulates throughout our body and coats all the organs over and over and over. And it stays there. Our body has a hard time getting rid of it. It stays there for years and years. And then every little bit that we're exposed to stays there and builds up to higher and higher levels. So it's persistent and it's bioaccumulative. And it's all got all kinds of toxic effects as well. So you've got this unique chemical that not only gets out and stays in the environment, but it has this ability to get into us, into living things who are exposed to it, and stay there, where it can act almost like a ticking time bomb, where it has, you know, years of ability to cause harm as it circulates throughout the body. And because of that, what you're seeing, you know, particularly when regulators and scientists now are trying to figure out, like, what are safe levels in the water? The levels keep coming down lower and lower into the part per trillion level because this stuff stays in us so long. Mm-hmm. In the smallest amounts we're exposed to, will stay there and build up over time. That's why you see the focus on such minute levels. And the science, unfortunately, is showing that even at these very low levels, they have the ability to cause all kinds of harm in living things, including humans. So kind of using that as perspective, there is no natural or, quote, background level for any of these chemicals in people. They are not found in human blood. So if you find it naturally, that is.
Right,
so if
right.
you find any amount of these chemicals in a human, they came from these manufacturers. These companies put them out there. And unfortunately, knowing since the 1970s that if they used them and made them and put them into the environment, that they would get into people and get into us and stay there. It's almost like we were being used as walking landfills for these chemicals. They mm-hmm. knew that they would end up in people. So that's why this lawsuit is focusing on the chemicals that are now being found in our blood. You know, almost 99% of the people in this country, for example, are estimated to have these chemicals now in our blood. Babies are being born with them because it passes from the mother to the baby in the womb. So, and none of them are there naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this is man-made contamination.
Right.
And what we're hearing, though, from the manufacturers is, well, you can't prove. You, the exposed people, you can't prove what harm these are doing to you. And it's your burden to do that. So we're trying through this lawsuit to have a court to require that the proper testing and studies and all be done to tell us exactly what they're doing and to confirm what those adverse health effects are. And if the companies are saying, you know, you need millions of people and tens of thousands of cases to confirm and actually have valid results, then they should be paying for have that done. We shouldn't have to pay that. States and local communities or firehouses should not have to be paying to have these kinds of studies done to prove what kind of harm is happening to them. So that's what we're focusing on through the case, and it's based on this really unique nature of these chemicals.
There's a term that's been being used around the fire service the last maybe 5 to 10 years called off-gassing. And with the Firefighter Cancer Initiative that I learned about in 2016, I was one of the, even though I've been in the fire service, I heard about firefighters with cancer, and I thought it was the guys who and gals who worked the pile after 9/11. But I got an education, and that's what got me connected to Cindy L. and got me to Diane. And I grew up in Framingham, just outside of Worcester. And so I know the city well, and I got connected and I got really into it. And then I wound up with two scares myself and found an ex I had met through a friend of mine that I lost, unfortunately, but who was not a firefighter, but he was seeing a oncologist, and he asked me to come along. He and his wife, we've been dear friends for many years, and come along kind of like with my background, kind of translate some of the doctor stuff for them. And the doctor and I hit it off. And when I had my first scare, I went to him, and we did the first battery of testing. And he says, you know, I don't think there's any validity, but if there's a chance, we need to make sure that you go through all the tests to make sure. So I went through 6 weeks of tests. And as we were finishing it, you know, I said, you know, as a firefighter, how much? He goes, well, why? Because of a firefighter. I said, do you know anything about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative? He goes, no. So I told them all about it, and I told them that I had become friends with Dr. Alberto Martinez down at University of Miami, Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. He's been on the show, and Dr. Natasha Sole, they both been on the show several times talking about cancer in the fire service. And one of the things we found is that a lot of times the fire was out, but we're still pulling down walls and ceilings to make sure there's no extension, we would take off our bunker coats because we were sweating, we were tired. And so we'd do that. But we didn't realize is that all that heat that was in that fire was causing these chemicals to continue to off-gas. And not just the fluorine that we're talking about, PFAS, but other poisonous chemicals. And that was getting into us. And that was probably a good part of what was causing these. So now we're kind of the mindset from, you know, there's no such thing as a routine fire anymore. And we're treating any fire, any type of fire, from a wastebasket to a dump, as a hazmat incident. We have to think of it like a hazmat incident. Because we need full, you know, decon before we get back in the rigs to go home after the call's over with, because we don't know what we're carrying on ourselves. And once we get back to the firehouse, we need, or back to our homes if we're volunteers, we need to shower right away and scrub ourselves down because of this. And I think that what people don't realize is that these chemicals that you're talking about in all the products, in our carpeting, when you're cooking eggs in your Teflon no-stick pan, that all these chemicals off-gas. So it's not that you have to eat the chemical. It's not that you have to drink it. It's in your home, and it's floating around in the air that you can't see. And that's probably the most insidious part of these chemicals that you're talking about, because we get, I'll use the term, infected by them without even knowing that they're there, that there's some sort of prevention we might have or could have done had we known before the fact.
Yeah, and I know one of the main concerns, obviously, with these PFAS chemicals are direct ingestion, of course, like with drinking water, or with dust, you know, that's been generated, you know, from breakdown of materials, you know, of the gear or foam, you know, residue that's got dust or it remains in the equipment. You know, what we're trying to really encourage at this point is the studies to link and confirm the connection between the, you know, whether or not these increased cancer rates that have been well documented in firefighters, you know, to what extent are the PFAS chemicals involved in that?
Right.
You know, we know, for example, that PFOA, through the independent science panel work that was done out in West Virginia, it was linked with 6 different diseases, kidney cancer, testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, preeclampsia, and high cholesterol. And we know, obviously, that firefighters historically have elevated cancer rates, certain types of cancers.
Sure.
So I know there's research that's being done right now, and there's people that are asking for even more to be done to try to see whether or not you know, these increased cancer rates in firefighters are connected with these PFAS chemicals that can sometimes have the same results in,
right,
in cancer effects. So, I mean, that's it's disturbing to see how little, frankly, has been done, you know, to really nail that down. There's a lot of stuff that's being proposed. There are some studies that are underway now, but you know, these are going to need to be very large studies with thousands and thousands of people participating to avoid the argument from the companies that you're inevitably going to hear. Well, the study wasn't big enough. There weren't enough cases, so we really can't draw any valid conclusions. So that's why we're trying to encourage, you know, these massive studies with tens of thousands of people, so that we can avoid any confusion about whether or not these effects are there or not, and whether they're linked to these chemicals.
Sure. So, with that said, how do we, the citizens of this country, firefighters, and everybody else, how do we help back your efforts? What can we do for ourselves and to help you in your effort?
Well, I think the primary thing is to speak out and have these discussions like we're having today. You know, education and having people talk about that this issue exists and that this data is needed, and to be, you know, insisting on to those who have the ability to fund these studies or to order them or to set them up, you know, that these be done and that they be prioritized and that, you know, we don't keep kicking this can down the road and letting more and more people be exposed, you know, that we need to get these, this research completed. need to get these links confirmed. And you know, the more people can talk about it, discuss it, and demand answers, the better. Now we need to be asking folks exactly what is in the various items that we're purchasing. You know, exactly what are the chemicals in there? Are these chemicals still there or not? If they're not, what's replaced them? You know, what do we know about those? There's this very little, unfortunately, that's made available to the public about what's in a lot of these items. So we've just got to really be demanding that information.
You think there's the demand for, again, we're in the midst of not only the pandemic, but an election season. Do you think that the demand for increased regulation over these companies is a valid point to raise? Not necessarily it will pass, but is it a valid point to even think about?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily even that you have to increase regulation as opposed to enforcing things that are already there.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, requiring companies that are clearly responsible, you know, to pay for things that they've done. It doesn't necessarily require, you know, that new regulations or new laws come into place. It requires that frankly, some of the existing laws be enforced.
Right, right. Is there a unified website or a place that people can go to keep attuned with what your work is and keep abreast of that?
Not really. I mean, I've got a website, obviously, on our firm's website.
Sure.
At taflaw.com. There are a number of environmental groups that are working on this issue that have great websites and resources that I think would be useful for particularly, you know, folks in the firefighting community. For example, the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, has great resources about these chemicals. Center for Environmental Health, the Green Science Policy Institute. You know, there are a number of these environmental organizations that are working with, a lot of these are community groups dealing with water contamination. But a lot of this information about the chemicals and about, you know, products, particularly if, like, for example, the Green Science Policy Institute has a lot of resources about which companies are switching away from these chemicals in which products, you know, that might be useful to folks, you know, trying to figure out what's in gear, what's in
sure.
which foam, that kind of thing.
Right, right. Okay, well, this has been an amazing time, and I really appreciate you taking time out of a very busy schedule. I will suppose, not use the other word that we sometimes say when we think we know something, I will suppose that we'll, most of us who are following you and Dr. Peasley and Diane and her group will be kept abreast of the developments with the lawsuit here. What's the kind of a time frame as we close up? What's kind of a time frame for hearing back from the court whether they'll accept a class action filing?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the way a lot of things have kind of been slowed down because of the
right.
virus. But
sure.
We're hoping to complete all of the legal briefing and wrangling over that class issue, hopefully by the end of this year, early next year.
Excellent.
So we're hoping to have you know, that issue resolved sometime soon.
Great. That would be great. And we'll do our best to keep our listeners and our viewers posted. By the way, if you're listening, we do not have a video of this conference today because of a problem with Zoom. But that's okay. We really appreciate your time, Mr. Blatt. It was great to hear the information that you're using for us. And again, I think it's important for our listeners to know that this is not just about firefighters. Yeah, it's very important. We've been using those chemicals for almost 50 years now ourselves. But it's about the people of this country who live here, who want to get up every morning and do what they have to do, go to work, take care of the kids, go teach, whatever it is that they do. They want to know that they can do it basically safely without poisoning themselves when they're brushing their teeth or taking a glass of ice water after mowing the lawn outside on a summer's day. We want to be safe. And I think this is what this whole situation and this lawsuit represents is your work with the other folks to make our lives safer here in the United States in a way that the people themselves can't do because they didn't even know about what was happening to them.
Right. And I really appreciate the opportunity, you know, to be here and to talk about this because, again, I think, you know, it's critically important that we have these conversations. You know, nothing's going to change unless we demand it and, you know, stand up and speak out about these issues.
Very true. Very true. Well, again, our sincere thanks to Robert Blatt. Mr. Blatt, if you'll hold on one second as I close the audio file. And we'll be right back, folks, with more information right after these words. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
/145/92
/180/111
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, you know, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm probably okay to have one more drink before I drive home. I'm probably okay. I open the window to stay alert.
Probably okay, I just popped some gum in my mouth.
Step out of the car, please.
I probably made a mistake.
Probably okay isn't okay when it comes to drinking and driving. If you see a warning sign, stop and call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast with attorney Robert Blatt and the information that he provided for us today on the poisoning of not just firefighters in our gear, but Americans all over due to pollution of these chemicals that have been man-made and now are running loose in our environments today. And we hate this new name that being given called forever chemicals. So we'll see what comes out of that. More importantly, today we are proud to announce that we have written our first disbursement check from our nonprofit company. Some of you may have seen a couple of weeks ago a small fire department, volunteer fire department, as a matter of fact, in Kansas. Their structure and two of their apparatus were hit by some guy driving a pickup truck at about 100 miles an hour. He survived with a broken hip, but the building was damaged beyond repair, and the two apparatus were seriously damaged as well. And I spoke with my two friends who are partners in life, great guys, other firefighters are on the board of directors. And I said, wouldn't this be a great way for us to kick off what we want to do with Five Alarm Task Force Corp as a nonprofit to help firefighters, to help our family out there? And of course, we also hope to be able to help other first responders as well. But we did, and we sent a check. I spoke with the chief of that department in Kansas. He was amazed to think that a small business nonprofit in South Florida would care about what happened to his fire department. And I tried to explain to him, it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're in Kansas, whether you're in Canada, whether you're in Bangladesh, whether you're in South Africa, we are all a family. And those of us who have traveled know that. All we have to do is identify ourselves as firefighters when we go to visit a firehouse, any other place in the world. And even with a language barrier, we're often welcomed in, welcome to a meal, welcome to even ride sometimes, if we so desire. And because that's who we are. We are a family. We are brothers and sisters with a dedicated purpose, as are our brothers and sisters in blue, and our brothers and sisters in EMS, and our call takers, our dispatchers, our tow truck drivers, recovery operators. We just lost one, again, to a drunk driver in the last 48 hours. And our road rangers, we are all first responders, and we are a huge family, and we have to take care of each other. And that's what our goal is here at the new nonprofit company. We want to help take care of our brothers and sisters in dire need. And that's going to be very important to us. So We need more donations, but we can't just wait for donations because people out there need some help. And so we want to give you the avenue. If you are in a dire financial situation, please send an email to us at help me, at 5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. That will come to a private mailbox, and it'll only be shared with the two other members of the board of directors, and we will vet, so there's information that we'll need. All that information, by the way, is on our website. And if you go to the website, 5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org, and you go to our mission, and you'll see there's a place where you can ask for help, and that's the Help Me page, and it'll explain what you have to provide to us, and then we'll be in touch with you to vet the situation with you. And if we deem it as for consideration, then we'll do our best to get a check out to you as quickly as possible. Now, right now, we've only had one donation. One donation. That's all we've had. And that's not going to allow us to do our work. So we need you. And it does, by the way, we're not asking you to send $10,000 out of your bank account. $1, $5, $10. If we can get 100 of $1 and $5 and $10 mixed, that would be great. That would be terrific for us. But we also have rewards. We're going to have rewards. Our first batch of shirts were printed this past week. I'm waiting for delivery. And you may have seen a post I put on Instagram today. I'm going to be putting it on the website shortly, of this handmade flag. And you can have it designed as a firefighter's flag, law enforcement flag, EMS flag, but it can be personalized for you. There's a gentleman, I believe, he's a veteran of our armed forces, and we thank him for his service, for every day he served to help protect this country. And he makes these by hand, custom designed. So we're going to offer those flags as part of the rewards on our Scroll of Honor to what we call our regular citizens. Not, in other words, not a corporate donation, but anybody who designates a level, which is our deputy chief, which is from $501 to $1,000, or a chief is $1,000+, will get included in the rewards that we will send out. Will be one of these flags, and they can tell us how they would like to have it designed. So we want to give you something back for helping us. So we're going to have stickers, we're going to have t-shirts, we're going to have mugs, we're going to have caps, we're going to have static decals for the windows. And people say, well, how can we help you? All right, well, not everybody can donate. We're in the middle of a pandemic. So you want to know how you can help? Spread the word. Give people our website. Give other people. Maybe somebody who, you know, might be able to just send us $5 or $10 to donate. We have the donate buttons all over the website. So almost no matter where you are, there'll be a donate button there for you. And if you have any questions about donations, please send an email to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org, and I'll answer your questions to the very best of my ability. We don't want you to hurt yourself by donating to us, but if you can send a small amount, like a $1 or $5, something like that, that's going to build up, and that will indeed help us, and we hope that it won't hurt you. And that's the goal. We want to be able to help you. That's what it boils down to, just like we helped this fire department in Kansas. And if you're in a dire position, we want to be the ones to try to do our best to help you. And sometimes it might not even be our money. Sometimes we might be able to direct you. We'll be in touch with your community and direct you to resources in your community, or direct those resources to you to help you. So we want to do whatever we can because, as I said, we are family. And it's who we are, and it's what we do. And that's my view.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, Wish I could do that. If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that?" If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Robert Bellot, for joining us today to discuss the dangers of PFAS and PFOS fluorine carbon chains in our drinking water, in our bunker gear, and basically in all parts of our life. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training, LLC, and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. You can now follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5AlarmTaskForce, on Facebook at /DalmatProdFire, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5-AlarmTaskForceCorp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.